This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. Emma Trellis has come here from Miami to read you an opening poem.
Novena Poderosa. Fill the glass, light the wick, prick three drops upon a sheet. Honor the dead with gardenias, stuff throats with the scent of forgiveness. Honor the living with seasoned timber. There is reckoning found in patience and plank. Eat 12 grapes on the eve of each year. Your mind will wield a silvered resilience. String a satchel of thistle to slit ill intentions. An orange beneath the bed to sweeten the heart's dark pockets. Pray for clarity. Pray for vengeance. Pray to La Santa Barbara, who favors red carnations, spools fire from her lips, her copper swords.
Emma Trellis has been in Washington, living it up, and you've been doing poetry things. What have you been doing?
What have I been doing? I read last night at the Busboys and Poets Cafe, which was just an incredible experience to be there in the Langston Hughes room, surrounded by such a strong and engaged poetic community.
And today you're with us.
Yes.
What I want everyone to know is that you're a journalist and you are an art critic. You write about art. You write about art books. I've read your work in the newspapers from Miami when you would go to a gallery. And now I have you here as a poet. Now, Louise Bogan was one of the first poet laureates here, and she was a journalist, and she wrote for The New Yorker. And women did not do that early on in the century, in the 20th century. So that I'm very interested in a woman who is a journalist and a poet. What do you do different in each field?
Well, when you're a journalist, you really have the clock ticking behind you. So you don't have the luxury of carefully crafting every nuance, every sound, every comma, although I try to do that as much as possible.
But isn't it a different head, though, you put on?
Yes and no. W.H. Auden said the first act of writing is noticing, and that is so true for journalism as well as for writing poems.
Well, here she is. She's the author of Tropicalia, and that was the University of Notre Dame Press, and she's the winner of the Andre Montoya Poetry Prize. She has a chapbook, Little Spells. She's an award-winning poet. She's been published variously in many prestigious journals, including the Montserrat Review, the Poetry Review, Poets and Artists. I just read an interview by her in, I think it was Me Poesius or Poets and Artists. And now she's going to hear a poem.
Autoretrato Quintina. A mind needs a place to set its teeth, and grace arrives in fixing the toilet, in water smoothing the pre-dawn fears of possible cysts, faulty seat belts, the radio loop of reasons I'm needed and belong nowhere. Here is a mirror without las meninas, and nowhere does light soften brow and wrist to the grays blessed by Velasquez. Here is a needle's loop for a mouth. Here is a sheet of water rising behind the iris. Here, the possible, a mottled gold. My skin is a plausible way of counting miles, the tender nowhere route of veins. Tongue floating in water carried since birth. My hands have the grace to wield a wrench, to pull a chain loop free from its knots, and sketch the oval loop a portrait might make if the impossible appeared. A king's room brushed with grace, sun fixed to lace, and a leisure nowhere near the bathroom echo of iron and water. In this lull between doing and dreaming, water owns shadow and animal rust. Water loops music around the heads of all who are nowhere in the path of sleep. draw closer. Mm-hmm. It is possible to love the trouble in this face, to surrender.
The voice of Emma Trellis. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and this is The Poet and the Poem. As I listened to that, I realized all of the sentient qualities you have and that you're known for, the imagery and the sensuality, which comes from living in Miami, perhaps. I don't know.
But I think so.
What are the dynamics that keep the poem together? Because you have the elements of sight, sound, hearing. What dynamic do you think is the glue that keeps that poem from falling apart?
Well, that poem is written in a form that I devised. It's a quintina, which is five lines, and the five end words are repeated throughout the poem. So that is really sort of the cement that holds the five stanzas together.
Good point. So do you attribute your success to form, or form and a departure from form? But you feel you have to know it first, right?
I love to write in form on occasion. It's easier to have a predetermined template in a way.
But how come you do it so that we can't hear the form?
I don't know, Grace. I think it just sort of occurs that way as you're paying attention to the diction and the craft of language. And so there's repetition that creates a sustenance in the poem.
That's a good word. It's a good word.
But at the same time, there's variation and imagination involved.
I'm giving you an A plus, because when I hear form, sometimes I say, oh, there's a sestina, there's a villanelle, there's a clunkety clunkety clump, oop, you know, here we go again. And you don't show it. Mm-hmm. It's just folded in like satin. Emma Trellis is here with her satin. Let's go on.
Florida poem. After summer rains, marble thumb snails and beetles blot the window screens with pearl and drone. Gardenias swell, breathing is aquatic, and travel a long drawl from bed to world. During drought, the heat becomes a devil girl with oven-red lips who wants your brains puddled in a brass-capped mason jar, who wants the silver stripped from your tongue, the evening pulse between your legs. Yes, she wants everything from you.
Okay, let's just take that poem, Emma. Look at it on the page and tell us what decisions you made that you can remember while you were writing that poem.
That poem was inspired by a R. Crumb drawing on a candy bar, his Devil Girl candy bar. And I was so taken by the image. It was in summer when I saw it, and I sort of amalgamated the idea of the heat of my home state and the idea of this woman, this fiery sort of trickster-like woman.
I love that. Give us the last line again, the last two lines.
Between your legs, yes, she wants everything from you.
That was a decision that wasn't on the candy bar.
No, but, you know, it's kind of hard to explain how things happen in poems sometimes. Sometimes they just arrive from the ether.
I know. The decisions you make, though, as a poet, are so natural to you that when someone like me comes in and wants you to objectify them, you realize things like you decided for that to be short instead of long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And why? Because it does have a thrust, you know, it has one thing to say. And so that was, you just felt you had said it, right?
I think it's instinct to some degree. I heard Dorian Locke say something very interesting about how a poem chooses you. And I think to some degree a poem also chooses its own shape and length.
I agree completely. So give us another one and we'll see what shape and length it has. This is The Poet and the Poem. That is Emma Trellis.
What would have happened if I had married you? We buy a house, not one of those Spanish tiled numbers that have drowned this town with their stealthy shine. Our home has hardwood dignity, pewter fixtures, fruit trees out back. We hire a cleaning lady. Her name is Pilar. She dusts the grain and amber furniture, cooks our dinner at night, gallo pinto, plantains, all forms of slaughtered meat. Pilar smokes on the back patio. She makes me want to smoke, too, only I can't, because I'm trying to get pregnant and read that I should purge myself of all I love before conceiving. At night, I listen for your snore, wait for your octopus stretch across the bed. I slip across the patio, past key lime, mango, sapodilla, and mamey. White-souled and ravenous, I climb branches, swallow skins, save the seeds for later, knowing even the shriveled ones can bear life.
That's one of my favorite poems in the book. Why did you name the helper that would be in the house?
What was her name? Pilar? Yeah. Why? I just like the name, and I think in Miami there are a lot of families who employ Latin American workers.
But you know, those are little diamonds in the poem. Just having that proper name, or it's just the thing that works. Not, I will hire someone to help me in the house, you know. And that's why they talk about your sentience when they do talk about your poetry. It is that, the detail that is an Emma detail that somebody else might not say. Now, the reason that, that poem appeals to the little girl in me, because that's such a daydream poem.
Hmm.
You know, this is what my house is going to look like. I don't know if men write poems like that.
Well, it's very much what I think of as a speculative poem. And I like to write those, just imagining a different path. So much of our life is decided by the choices we make, both small and large. So sometimes I like to speculate as what would have happened if I had made a different choice.
When you teach poetry, do you ask them to ask your students to just go into the ether and just imagine, run that film of their future?
I like to give them as much freedom as possible, although I do like to have them read a lot of poems first as a place, a well of inspiration.
Mm-hmm. How often do you teach?
I teach 3 times a week at Barry University, a small Catholic university.
Oh,
in Miami.
I didn't know that. I thought you just did poetry workshops.
I do that too.
Oh.
I teach occasionally at the Florida Center for the Literary Arts.
Oh, I see. 3 times a week.
But right now, yes, I'm teaching literature.
Mm-hmm. Literature and or creative writing.
Right now it's literature. This summer it will also be creative writing.
What are you having them read right now?
Well, we just finished our poetry component, but I had them write a 9-part poem inspired by Wallace Stevens' 13 Ways of Looking at a Blackbird. And I had them write a sonnet inspired by Rita Dove's Sonnet in Primary Colors.
She would like to know that. Why don't you write her and tell her that?
Maybe I will.
Yeah, because you'd be surprised. They don't get that big that they don't care.
Hmm.
You know?
That's nice to know.
Let's have some more.
The Living Hour. Caped in sage and chalk moon brooch, the sky arrives. The offering is wet grass, a whipstitch of birdsong. How does its nickel pitch thread April's blue quartz light? How does it find hold in the whorl of the ear? It is not enough to paint a place. Let me offer my confession, then, amidst my unseen neighbors, the sly tarpon cutting tunnels beneath the inlet, the wild blood of branches. I am a woman of doubt. I am a woman running from my youth. I might rest a while in this little kingdom, not map escape, but fall backwards, liquid, floating, down to where plain thoughts await. Mm. It is the dream of all warriors to silence the dirge that has trailed us since birth. Look here, desk, window, the city diminished, rolled back its carpet of gears and wailing.
Oh, that's terrific. Carpet of gears and wailing. I was just getting high on Witch, stitch, nickel, pitch. I mean it. Dirge, birth. I mean, you just know how to couple those consonants and those vowels. And that is not consciously done.
I don't think so.
Can't
although
be.
I do read my poems out loud as I'm working on them, and I am looking for a certain music.
Well, you got it. And that would be good to tell our students, right? I always tell them to read aloud as a part of revision.
Yes.
And I can tell you did that. But I was really thinking, I wonder if reading it on the page, which I did, I didn't get hit with it that hard. But when I got into wit, stitch, nickel, pitch, I thought the voice really helps a lot. Let's have more voice from Emma Trellis.
Let me
tell you a little bit more about her, though. She has her MFA in creative writing, and that's from Florida International University. And she's been in many, many venues. The Miami Book Fair must be lots of fun to be part of. Do you engage in that every year?
Well, I read at the Miami Book Fair International last November, which was just incredible.
Oh, it looks like it's a wild place.
It was just amazing. It's really a book lover, a literature lover's heaven. And then I also read at the O Miami Poetry Festival last April, which was such an honor to be a part of. Our keynote speaker was W.S. Merwin. And it was such a thrill to be sitting in the audience and listening to him read. And
he was our poet laureate.
Yes, he was our poet laureate. Yeah. And just hearing him speak about humanity and how passionate he is and how compassionate he is, it was very inspiring.
What is a Letras Latinas web blog?
Letras Latinas web blog is
basically... You say it so much better than I do.
it's the web blog of Letras Latinas, which is the literary arm of the Institute for Latino Studies at University of Notre Dame.
Do you know the website address offhand? Is it like www. Because I think our audience would probably like to know that. I think if they Google Letras Latinas...
It's the first hit if you Google it.
Yeah. Okay. And you've been, I know... I've read your work on Best American Poetry blog.
As I've read yours.
And we love it. And you live in South Florida.
Yes.
Okay. How south is Florida? I mean, Miami, South Florida, right?
It's another world, basically. It doesn't quite feel connected to the rest of the country. It's this strange twilight world between the Americas and the U.S.
Could you live anywhere else?
I think I could. Yes, definitely. It's a big world. And I'm interested in all of it.
Clearly, it shows. Emma Trellis.
This week. I don't want to forget the walks. After day dissolved the parkway. How air is an animal draped over skin in July. We tracked egrets sailing white over us. In pairs, a half hundred, until we found them origami folded in the needles of slash pines. Is it like this for everyone? Each nicking minute, the ritual laments. Then, without herald, the familiar, carrying you to clean fields once more, thankful to be standing in the heat watching egrets.
How much broadcasting do you do? Radio work.
I've been interviewed a few times on the NPR affiliate in Miami. It's WLRN. But that's about it.
You know, you have a radio voice. And why don't you just go there and ask them for 5 minutes a week?
I kind of approached them about it a while ago, but we just didn't quite connect. But
people
it's always something I'm interested in.
Well,
yes.
They are stingy with air. Radio stations are really stingy. But bring them this CD when you're finished and let them listen to
you. Well, they have it. I mean, they have the CD of the programs that we've recorded, so. Oh, of this one. Oh, okay, yeah, maybe I'll do that. That's a good suggestion.
You're sounding pretty.
Thank you.
Okay, Emma Trellis is here. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and she is an international voice, and she also has a Latin background, a Spanish background. Where are those roots?
Well, both my parents are from Cuba, and they immigrated here when they were 19 and 20, so that was a little over 35 years ago. They were very young when they came here and very interested in assimilating.
And you were born here.
I was born in Miami, yes.
And so you were raised in a family where Spanish was spoken?
Yes, it was spoken around the house, but English was spoken just as much, if not more. And the television we watched was in English, and the books we read were in English. So we were very much part of the American culture.
When I was at PBS, I did a program, helped get it on the air, Capasa. Did you ever see that when you were a little girl?
Oh, I love that show.
Oh, see, I knew we had a history.
I love that show. Capasa. So funny. I watch it now, and it still makes me laugh.
It's a wonderful show.
Yes.
And here's Emma with more poetry.
Wawa. Could be the cry of a dog or a cartoon baby's mouth open to a pink cave of tonsils, the squiggle lines of an animator's pen bursting from his bald head. Wah, wah. The blank drone you hear when you dial out of the Casa Bella in Oaxaca, or the bleat of dusty buses charging streets alongside wagons dragged by mares. In Mexico, it's booze, the slurred song of a beer-heavy ghost, or the love charm Frida sang that lured men and monkeys from the tamarind trees. In Miami, Cuba, it's wawa, the W sound of water brushed into a dream, the war between why and wait. Wawa, the clipped cry from an imperfect memory, a wish to travel in reverse to an island shaped like a boomerang. You can fling it as far as 90 miles and still feel its edge in your hands.
As I listen to you, I think I know your traditions in poetry. There is in America an sort of an unconscious tension between narrative poets and language poets. In that, everyone pretends to be friendly, but I know language poets who are very sarcastic about the narrative form of writing. And I'm wondering, do you have any biases as you go into the poetry world? I mean, can you appreciate concrete poetry? Do you have any biases when you go in, or do you have to have a story?
I don't have any biases. I try to keep my mind open as I approach each poem, whether it's my own or someone else's. But there are times where my interests sway more into one camp than another.
And what is that?
Well, I think when I wrote this book, I was interested in narrative poetry and always paying a lot of attention to language. And now I'm a little more interested in lyric sort of meditations, perhaps incorporating elements of narrative, but also just sort of stretching that.
Lyric. So you would be more interested in the float of the line and less in telling facts?
Yes, the image, the feel of a poem.
Well, you do that already, though.
Well, that's the direction I'm hoping to
continue
in.
So that's your voice.
At the moment.
As you write long enough, though, you get tired of the same old thing.
Yes.
And I found that I had said a lot about how I felt. And then I wanted to just break it apart. And I kind of understood what happened to Ray Ehrmantraut. And I could see what these people were doing. Just to break down the form, just to get energy. And sometimes you don't have to tell people who you are anymore in the poem. And so I find that a very interesting trend.
I think that that's very true, especially I find persona poems particularly useful for that. You wrote a whole book, Anna Nicole, in the voice of another woman. And
yeah,
and
that's
I find
a great
that,
way to hide behind people.
And it's also a way to energize your work.
Anything we can do to keep going, Emma.
I couldn't agree more.
I'm Grace Cavalieri, and Emma's going to read us some more.
This is called Maleficent. No one has entered the stone of this place in a century. The dust has powdered even the cat's lashes. Still I sit, robes folded, crown pinned upon the river of my braids. Their diamond points have not forgotten how to find the door. Once there were feasts here, tables set in silk, glazed peacock, and pomegranates so ripe, a look from me would tear their skins. I love the quiet, the void of voices begging me for youth and vengeance, for the fastest way to travel over water, or how to spy by moonlight. I love how my hands do little but settle on my velvet lap. Afternoons I rise to circle the gardens, the devil's trumpet large enough now to shade all that lies beneath, moss, pond, the small star blossoms that burst in clumps along the earth, so bright, content to bleed their red selves into shadow.
How do you get that serene?
Well, I wrote it from the point of view of the sorceress in the fairy tale Sleeping Beauty, but much older now. So I was addressing the idea of powerful women and how we hope to achieve a certain kind of serenity as we age.
Well, that's amazing because you had to get into a comfort, a bubble, to feel what you felt, to write that poem so I could feel what you felt. Mm. And are you basically a pretty peaceful person?
Sometimes. I'm just as human as everyone else.
You're just as human as everyone else, Emma. I'm disappointed. Well, I read your book, and I got the feel. I knew your tempo, but to hear it is a whole different dimension. If you are recycling something from other poets, we all do it, what do you think it might be? If there's anything you think you might recycle from a great poet, what might it be?
I would say subject matter and form. When I read a poem by someone I admire and I see them addressing a subject I had not thought of consciously, mm-hmm. but that resonates with me, I'm inspired to address it in my own way.
And here is a final poem from Emma Trellis.
Courage and the Clock. Let the gods of glass and self-pondering know I hold tiny faith in their perfumes. 1 minute, lavender dusts the lips. Next, a dirty rope at the throat. There's no telling. Beneath each breast waits a hive, a garden green with jaws. Where we live, death is a favorite guest. See bees flock the felt corpse of a dove. How a child desires his wings. No time for mourners. Except for me, I can't stop filming my own funeral. Bury me on top of you, a pretty bed dressed in mauve thorns and femurs seamed together. Your neck the most succulent of lures. I'll forget my fears and eat the long grasses of your hair. I'm brave enough.
The voice of Emma Trellis. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. The Witter Binner Foundation supports this program. Additional support is from Avi Deshashani. Associate producer is Ken Flynn. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.